Winning is an everyday mindset, and on the Ways to Win podcast, coaches Craig Robinson and John Calipari are here to help. Each week, Craig and Coach Cal use their on-court wisdom to solve off-court problems. They'll talk about the latest news in college and professional basketball with coaches like Jim Boeheim, former players like Stephanie White, basketball analysts like Grant Hill, and more. Revealing insights that made them into the leaders they are today. And don't miss President Obama, sharing how he deals with pressure by projecting confidence, believing in your team, and taking criticism.
Budweiser's weekday sports beat continues on Sports Radio 960 AM WSBT. It is Monday, and that means Brian Driscoll Day from IrishBreakdown.com, the Sports Illustrated.
Notre Dame website. Own day?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
It's Driscoll Day. Didn't you know? Bri Day.
I love it.
It's Bri Day. There
it.
We go.
I love it. Oh, Bri Day. That's awesome. I'm putting that on a shirt.
I'm going to have to trademark that.
Sounds good.
Okay, so I've been holed up in the studio since before, you know, like probably an hour or so before the show started, just working on a bunch of stuff. So I did not see the breaking news. So I will let you go ahead and break it here on our air. Something has happened with one of Notre Dame's biggest rivals.
Yeah, USC today announced that they'd fired Clay Helton, their head football coach, after what was a disastrous loss this weekend to Stanford, and it was an embarrassing loss. They were down 42-13 at one point in time, ended up losing 42-28 after punching in a couple at the end of the game, and what had been kind of smoldering for years now, you know, he was 18-14 the last 3 years, finally came to fruition. Apparently the new AD, who's now in his second year, had seen enough, and they fired him, and the interim coach will be Dante Williams, who is their defensive backs coach. And this is obviously a big move that will affect Notre Dame, certainly, in regards to who USC hires to replace him.
What do you think about the timing, waiting two games into the season to do this? When, I mean, really, the last couple years, people have been calling for Clay Helton's job.
I think it's a poor decision. I mean, look, if he was on this tenuous of ground, you should have fired him in the offseason.
That's what I think, too.
Coach. And perhaps maybe they didn't have a guy lined up, but you can't tell me they now have a guy lined up after two games. You know, so to me, it's one of those things where it's an overreaction to a bad performance, and it tells me that they were already looking to make this move, and they just hadn't been able to hire and find the right guy. Because, I mean, look, we've seen programs suffer really bad early season losses and come back and be pretty good. I mean, USC in 2016, for example, started the season 1-3 and included a 50-plus point loss to Alabama, a double-digit touchdown loss to Stanford, and a loss to Utah. And by the end of the year, that team had won 10 games, beat Penn State in the Rose Bowl, and the next year they went 11-3. You know, and then we saw Ohio State in 2014 get beat by two touchdowns at home by Virginia Tech and ended up going on to win the national championship. My point isn't that USC was destined to win a title, but it's
right.
Is really two games. You know, if two games is enough to fire a guy, then you already had the information you needed to fire him in the first place.
Exactly.
And you should have done that. I just don't think it's fair to the players. I don't think it's fair to Clay Helton, to be honest with you, to fire a guy after two games, unless there was something going on, like he was cheating or something. But anyone that's ever known Clay Helton says he's the exact opposite of that. He's one of the nicest guys in the business.
Yeah.
And so, to me, I don't think it was that.
So he'll probably be Nick Saban's coordinator within a couple
years. He's going to be an offensive analyst for USC next year. And then he'll eventually become the play caller. And yeah.
Right. Right.
Yes.
Resurrect his career and then go to some other program and, you know, like Steve Sarkisian and flop again.
Exactly. It wasn't a good weekend for Steve Sarkisian either.
No, it wasn't. That is why I threw him
USC
in there.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, let's turn to Notre Dame, because we can laugh about Clay Helton, and of course Notre Dame hosts USC October 23rd. We can laugh about that all we want. But oh goodness, the offensive line. Not a laughing matter if you're...
Speaking of firing people.
Man, my goodness.
That's obviously something that a lot of Notre Dame fans are calling for right now, obviously.
And, you know, I touched on a little bit at the end of our first segment. So let me just ask you, what do you see as the biggest problems face, you know, just from a trying to get things cleaned up, trying to get them functioning, you know, like at least as an average offensive line. What do you see as the biggest problems right now about how they're going about what they're doing?
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. In hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
I see a unit that's clearly not being prepared well, and that is going to manifest itself in a few ways, Sean. Number one is some of it you expect to see, right? Missed assignments, blown assignments, guys turning people loose. I kind of expected to see some of that in the first couple games because of the fact that you do have four new starters up front. Now, this stuff of Brian Kiepe somehow, this is a young offensive line. Outside of one spot, this is not a young offensive line. You have a six-year senior, a fifth-year senior, a three-year starter at center as a senior, and a junior who came in the season with two career starts, including the Rose Bowl. So it does take some time for five guys to get together and gel together to play as a cohesive unit. So I expected some of that stuff. I think the bigger problem for me, Sean, more than anything, is they physically have gotten whipped the first two games.
Yeah.
That's the problem. You know, they're coming off the line. They're getting driven off the ball. They're not getting any push. The overall technique of veteran players. I mean, Cain Madden is a worse player at Notre Dame than he was at Marshall from a technical standpoint. That's unacceptable. You know, wow. Josh Lugg has regressed from a technique standpoint. Zeke Correll has regressed. Jarrett Patterson is a little different because, you know, he's kind of coming back and shaking off the rust after missing the spring. But you know, he got a little bit better. But the fact that you've got all these, you know, highly ranked guys and all these guys that have played before and you can't get them to form at a functional level against Toledo is incredibly problematic.
Yeah, when you have the toughest games of the schedule still to come and that stretch of five straight games against ranked opponents that starts with Wisconsin, you know they're going to be more, you know, physical. What to you, because we are 2 weeks into the season now and you expect something. You expect to see some kind of improvement. We would have expected, I think, to see improvement from game one to game two, especially since they're going from, you know, middle of the pack, potentially anyway, Florida State team to, you know, a MAC team. What's fixable right now? What's realistically fixable right now?
The thing that can and should get fixed by Saturday against Purdue by 2:30 kickoff is the fire, right? The power, the playing physical, playing tough. There's no, I don't care if you're a freshman or a sixth year senior, playing hard is about want to. It's about desire. It's about the coach putting those players in position to say, hey, look, you know, whatever, if you're going to make a mistake, make it 100 miles an hour. You know, that's why when I look at the defense and I think of the mistakes that they've made that have been costly, I look at it and say, you know what, like they're playing hard. They're on pace to blow away the best marks for sacks and tackles for loss under Brian Kelly. Like they're on pace for over 120 tackles for loss in this season. Their highest under Kelly's like 94, right? So you look and say, hey, there's some really good stuff happening. You just got to clean up these mistakes. With the offensive line, it's not that. It's not only are you making mistakes, but you're not even playing hard. And that's got to be fixed, and that can be fixed right now. That's about the coach lighting a fire into those players' behinds. It's about Jarrett Patterson and Josh Lugg demanding that a standard be set for how they go about their business every day from an emotional, fiery standpoint. And it's about, you know, if that doesn't happen, then there need to be personnel changes. And those things can and should happen by Saturday. I mean, they need to happen by tomorrow's practice, to be honest with you.
Jack Cohn harassed all day. He was sacked six times, like when we turn to the passing aspect or the pass blocking aspect. But with what the offensive line is giving them right now as they continue to try to work through their stuff, is there anything you think like they can do from a, you know, like a play design slash pass route standpoint that can kind of help Jack Cohn a little bit?
I think they're going to have to move the pocket a little bit. And they tried it early in the game. They ran an RPO where he pulled and got outside and threw a ball to 37 yards Avery Davis, and they called it back for an illegal man downfield, which I thought was a bad call because Jarrett Patterson was engaged with a defensive lineman. He just drove that guy downfield on an RPO. That's not supposed to be a penalty as far as I understand the rule. So plays like that I think are good. I think that I'd like to see them do more things where they attack the perimeter a little bit, you know, just, hey, quickly get that catch and throw it, you know, get it out there on some screens. You know, if you know that they're going to, so for example, what Toledo was doing is when the running back would, let's say he was to the right of the quarterback and he would check, look for a guy to block, and then he'd do like a release route to the right, they'd trigger that linebacker to the left. Okay, well, I've got something for that. I'm going to be running a high-low concept coming right behind that the next time the next time we're going to do that. And that way, if that guy comes, we've got a route replacing him. If he doesn't come, then you stick with your route concept. There are some things like that, but that requires Tommy Rees to see how teams are going to play them. Well, now you've got a little bit of an idea of how teams are going to attack your offensive line. So you have some stuff like that. There was a real effective crossing route to Joe Wilkins.
Yeah.
There was obviously a crossing route that went for a touchdown. Or on the first drive. So I think some more levels concepts. Those are like, you know, you got a guy short, middle, deep, kind of on one level.
Mm-hmm.
I think some things like that. Moving the pocket is a good one. You know, started the game off with a bootleg, and, you know, Jack Cohn executed it perfectly, got it over to Avery Davis for a 14-yard gain, and another 15 tacked on from a face mask. I think more of that kind of stuff. Maybe some max protection deep shots, you know, to Braden Lindsey, where would maybe be something you could do. And then, of course, whenever you get in a one-on-one on the outside with one safety, you tell Jack Cohn, I don't care what the call is. If you have Braden Lindsey and Kevin Austin in a one-on-one outside with one safety deep, you check to a go route and just take those shots. I think those are things that I think he can do. But again, in Tommy Rees's defense, I don't know if you go into a game saying, like they did, saying, hey, here's our game plan in case our offensive line gets destroyed by Toledo. But now he has to do that, right? Moving forward, it's going to be on him if he doesn't have a game plan prepared now that he's seen what this line can potentially do in a negative way.
That's a great point about Lindsey and Austin, because I don't think that there are too many matchups where whoever's going to be on them are going to be better than them. They should be able to win those matchups consistently.
If the O-line would have protected well on Saturday, Braden Lindsey would have had a monster game.
Yeah.
I mean, he was open all game. He was getting frustrated, but to his credit, he kept going. He kept going. He kept running those routes, even though he wasn't getting the ball. But, you know, if they can give him some time to throw, he's gonna have a couple monster games coming up here soon.
Right. Brian Driscoll from IrishBreakdown.com, the Sports Illustrated Notre Dame website. I mean, I think you talk about the RPO, and that is back in the offense this year. And, like, we can agree that Jack Cohn is never going to be Ian Book or Tyler Buchner with his running ability, but it seems like there are some times where maybe he can be a part of that. Like if he pulls and keeps, like he can at least keep defenses more on it. You know, he's like, again, he's not going to break off 20 and 30 yard runs like Tyler Buchner, but he can get, you know, 3, 4, 5 yards, you know, here and there. Wouldn't that kind of help as well?
Yeah, now that's more of a read zone as opposed to an RPO.
Okay.
And an RPO is different. An RPO is more of a you either hand it off or you pull and throw it. Now, there were some triple option RPOs that we broke down this summer that they did with Jack Cohn early. That was the play to Avery Davis, and then did with Tyler Buchner. And I liked that wrinkle. I was actually really – the fact that they called it first with Tyler Buchner was the surprise for me. And I loved that creativity. But what they simply need him to do, to your point, Sean, is just a read zone, right? There's some RPO stuff you can do to throw behind that. But when they're crashing that backside edge, he's just got to pull it and run for 10, 12 yards. And that's what's in front of him. I mean, that's how open it is. And he only has to do that a couple times before people are like, hey, you know, we're going to protect that. And then, you know, do with him what you did with Tyler Buchner. Just have your tight end wrap around the backside and making it look like he's going to seal the backside edge on an inside zone or outside zone, and just have him wrap around and be a lead blocker for Tyler Buchner. There was a play, if Tyler Buchner pulls it, he made a wrong read. If he pulled, and he knew it, as soon as he handed it off, he just saw his head go up like, oh my gosh, I should have pulled that. Because it was him, a receiver, and two DBs. Or is him a tight end and a receiver and only two DBs? He might still be running. He might be halfway to San Diego by now if he would have pulled that thing and ran with it. And you can do some of those things with Jack Cohn enough to where he can move the chains and keep people honest. And You know, I think he needs to do that, and it needs to be part of the game plan because, like you said, that backside crash on – people are just going to keep doing that with him in the game until Notre Dame makes him pay for it.
So what do you do with the quarterbacks going forward?
I mean, this is – like what we saw on Saturday, Sean, is what you and I have talked about all summer. This is what I wanted to see.
Yeah,
Jack Cohn's your starting quarterback. Tyler Buchner brings value. He's too dynamic not to play. I hope it looks just like what we saw in 2006 with Florida and Tim Tebow and Chris Leak. Chris Leak was always the starter. There was never a doubt, even though fans wanted Tim Tebow, who was a five-star recruit and a Florida kid, and ended up being a tremendous player. But Tim Tebow knew his role in 2006. Jack Cohn and Chris Leak knew his role, and they went on to win a title. This needs to be Jack Cohn's team, but Tyler Buchner also needs to have a role. And doing things like we saw on Saturday, the fact that they let him throw and not just run, I thought was brilliant. You can ask Vince. I was calling for that wheel route for a quarter and a half, and they finally went to it, and it worked. You know, but I loved that play call. You know, I love the fact that the first time they threw the ball with Tyler Buchner, it was going to be a bomb. He got hit, and so it didn't get there, but it was a stop and go to Braden Lindsay. I love that aggressiveness. I want to see more of this. And, of course, you have to enhance your package to make sure teams don't always know exactly what you're going to do with Tyler Buchner. But I want to see that. And if there's a game where maybe Tyler Buchner's just really rolling because they just can't stop his running, then maybe you play him for a couple extra series more than you anticipated. But this still has to be Jack Cohn's team, and you still have to find ways to get Tyler Buchner involved, which is what we've been saying for months that we hoped they would do. So I'm glad they're doing it, but I also knew that if Tyler Buchner was successful in that regards, and you and I both knew this and everybody knew this, if Buckner's successful, then the calls are going to be, hey, play the young kid, right? And I'm glad it is because it means he played well. But when you lead a team on a 90-something yard drive the first time you ever play college football, there's right. going to be people saying, hey,
yep.
I want to see some more of this.
Yep. But, you know, I was pretty impressed just like with his composure and yeah. everything else that he had. You know, for a kid who didn't yeah. play his last year in high school because they canceled the season mm-hmm. and first home game and just the whole thing, what did you think?
I was really impressed by both of their quarterbacks from a composure standpoint. And I think
that's
Tyler
true
handled the moment. Yeah, Tyler handled his first moment incredibly well. He didn't rush that first play. He carried the fake. It looked like it was a designed play from the beginning. Maybe it wasn't. It just looked like it. But he carried the fake out, made a nice run, protected the football when he was around traffic. You know, there's a couple times he's cutting it away from people. He protected the ball well, looked poised. Moment wasn't too big for him. Wasn't like, you know, sometimes freshmen get in there and they run for 26 yards, they jump up and they're going crazy. He was clearly excited, but it was still looking for the next call. I loved that. I thought Jack Cohn handled that well. I think, you know, and then you talk about Jack Cohn handling the pressure. I mean, he not only did he get sacked six times, but you go back and watch that wheel route against Michael Mayer. I don't think he saw Michael Mayer catch the ball because he was in the process of having his face driven into the turf after he threw the ball. But you know, he comes out
any given
that last
play,
drive.
Wasn't it?
Yes. Oh, it really was. But here's the thing: he comes out on that last drive, and he throws a gorgeous ball to Kevin Austin on the first. I mean,
yeah.
Think about that. You're getting your head beat in all
yep.
game. The play call by Tommy Reese was great because he had that go route outside, but he also had a little angle route by Kyron Williams. So if they bail, you've got a little, you know, catch and run situation to Kyron Williams. But he saw the one-on-one. He made a great throw. Kevin Austin made a great catch. Then he gets his finger dislocated. The middle finger of his throwing hand. Let me tell you, as a quarterback, that is the last finger that I want to hurt. The last finger that I want to hurt, other than my thumb. My thumb and my middle finger, the two where it's about – that's where your grip primarily comes from, is those two fingers. And he has that popped out. He runs to the sideline after, again, getting driven to the ground, has the guy pop the finger back in on his throwing hand, goes right back out, throws a game-winning touchdown. If that doesn't endear him to Notre Dame fans, then I just think we've lost our souls. I mean, you know, that is like a Notre Dame moment that should live in infamy. It's just the toughness and the poise. Like, he was excited because he was trying to find someone to pop it back in. And then as soon as it got popped back in, he's running in. He's, you know, he's waving Tyler Buchner off. And I mean, just I thought both of those kids battled their butts off, looked poised, and represented themselves incredibly well. And played a huge role in this team coming out with a win. Well,
that's a great point, you know, because, I mean, Jack Cohn was – he was obviously hit pretty good all day, but to keep bouncing back like that and you know, especially, again, in a game where they bring in another quarterback and all these things, And then he comes in and leads the game-winning drive at the end of the game. After that happened, yeah, I think you're exactly right. A great deal of poise and composure on his part as well. All right, Brian, tell everybody what's going on right now at IrishBreakdown.com.
Well, right now I'm still wrapping up my grades. So right now I have my quarterback grades, my running back grades, and my receiver grades out. Later tonight I'll have tight ends and offensive line. We'll have the defensive grades out tomorrow. And I'm going to have a feature coming up here soon where I'm going to point out that for all the hand-wringing about the defense and things that genuinely need to get correct with the defense, they're showing some things early in two games that have me very excited about what this team can be and what this team can be very soon. And I mentioned I kind of teased a little bit with the tackles for loss. They're on pace for 123 tackles for loss. The highest under Brian Kelly's 94.
Wow.
They're on pace for over 50 sacks. I think they have yet to get to 40 under Brian Kelly. So they're doing some disruptive things that are very exciting. Now they've just got to clean up those things that are resulting in the big plays.
Clean up the big plays. That's right. Mm-hmm. All right, Brian Driscoll, IrishBreakdown.com. Good stuff as always. I'll talk to you later in the week.
Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.